This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
We stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, here we go, another Rock and Salk podcast. And Brock, this is our playoff edition. Well, off-season? Well, kind of in between. It's playoffs, just not for the Seahawks.
Playoffs?
Off-season?
We're talking playoffs?
It's the purgatory edition.
Yeah.
We wait.
It is purgatory. It hasn't felt that purgatorial. I mean, it sort of felt like Pete's just going to be here. And, you know, he said he's in good shape. I don't know what I asked him even whether he was referring to like literally being in good shape as like physically
after that plant-based turn.
Yeah,
that's right.
Right. Or whether he meant like he's got a good future here with the Seahawks. He didn't really want to elaborate on that. So who the heck knows what Pete meant?
Those Mondays. OK, in the NFL, all the teams that are losers. And I think I've told the story before in 1999, how we were in the locker room in New York. And Coach Holmgren, my rookie year, very clearly, like, you know, just very upset after a loss to the Jets that he thought knocked us out of the playoffs. When right. I knew as a third stringer watching the scoreboard, like, this game's in overtime. It's not over yet. And he's screaming at guys like, our exit interviews and a bunch of you will never be here again, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I run in the training room and, yeah, I think it was the Raiders that beat the Chiefs or vice versa. I think it was the Raiders beating the Chiefs in Arrowhead. And all of a sudden, we're division champs. I think he comes out in his towel from the shower. What I said about exit interview, never mind. We're in AFC West champions and they can't take that from us.
Max Strong just told that same story on the, he remembers it to a T, down to the specific
language. Because I think Mac was in the training room with me. I think there were like six or seven of us because I'm like.
Now, obviously you were in the training room.
Well, obviously I was like, this is like $7,500. What do we get for a playoff gym? $7,500 my rookie year. So I'm motivated like.
Sure.
Do we get another playoff check? But the veterans who had been there, who had the war wounds and the scars and the fusions like Mac Strong, were like, no, man, we still have a chance. And Mac was in that training room with about six of us watching the end of it. And then we were the first to celebrate, and the news reverberated, and then it got to the coach's shower, and Holmgren did come out. But I say that because there were exit interviews, and there certainly were for the Seahawks on Monday. And I'm curious, Salk, some of those Mondays – after the season ends with Pete, have been some of the most profound for you and I. Obviously, the magnitude of the Super Bowl loss was the biggest of all. But, you know, those were pretty meaningful. Pete took extra time. We knew that. And that was the last time we were going to hear from him for a while. How was he, from your perspective, with a dozen of those now?
He wasn't as much like that. I don't think. I didn't get that said. It didn't have that same sort of vibe to it. And in fact, when I started to ask him about some of those decisions, he was like, give me some time. Season just ended yesterday. And I was like, no, I have to fight back. I was like, coach, we're not going to hear from you again for months. I'm going to ask you this. Yeah. He's like, okay. there was a lot of, you know, I don't want to call it double talk because I think that sort of makes it sound more like he's a politician or something, but you know how Pete can be, where he'll sort of say both things and it depends on your perspective and what part of it you want to pick out, right? Mm-hmm. Is Russell Wilson going to be your quarterback? Yes. Also, we're open to making all kinds of changes and no one on the roster is safe, right? So like you can hear both of those things. Coach, are there going to be any changes to your coaching staff? I don't anticipate any. But also, we haven't even started looking at that yet. And once we do, we'll figure out what direction we want to go. So, you know, you can, if you want to, if you have a narrative going in with Pete Carroll that you either want to believe or just flat out believe is going to be the case, you can pick something out of his interview and say, this proves my point.
He's got red pill, blue pill.
And
all
if
the time.
Somebody else is there and is like, you know, hold on a minute, I hear this differently and plays a different piece of sound, it'll contradict you. And they're like, oh, yeah, that kind of says
is
that.
Is your
too.
Decision making loose?
Yeah, that question was a whole nother thing. Like, don't get me into that one. But I think he was not quite as introspective as he's been in some of those.
Uh-huh.
But
is that because the ground is not as stable?
I don't think
Michael
so.
Michael Silver, tweeted this morning on this Wednesday that we tape, that we'll find out today, right? What's the story with John Schneider and Pete Carroll?
Yeah. So, he did tweet that. I mean, I still can't envision a scenario in which Pete Carroll is not back as the head coach of the Seahawks unless he, for some reason, decides to take himself out, which he's given no indication would be the case. So I don't.
But hard to be introspective if I'm going to jump into this, and I appreciate your answer and I trust it because you've done 12 of them. If it's, you know, harder to be introspective, it's because the ground is more unsettled than it's ever been.
I didn't get that sense. Honestly, what I felt from Pete was he was still so fired up from what had happened the day before, even though it was the end of the season and they had, you know, their mm-hmm. season didn't end the way it was supposed to, that he was still kind of just riding that wave of a win rather than the sort of, maybe if they had lost, it would have been different, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, think about all of those post Seattle, you know, post other than after the Super Bowl, which I wasn't around for. Every one of them was after a loss, whether it was a playoff loss, the Super Bowl loss,
true,
the Arizona loss that kept them out of the playoffs. I mean,
Rams loss, playoff losses,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, like every Cowboys one loss. Of those interviews Packers came loss. After a loss. And in some ways, Pete's better after a loss. He's very, he can be more introspective and thinks through things a little bit more. And after a win, you get a lot of Pete's energy, right?
Yes.
And I think it's what the players got. And you heard it. I mean, Brady tweeting after the game. It's been 30, you know, half hour, and Pete's just in there partying with his guys, screaming and whooping and hollering and all the things that they do after a win. I mean, it, and I don't want to call it whistling past the graveyard. I know that they know the year didn't go the way they wanted it to. But they do see those as championship opportunities. That's Pete's. Mm-hmm. That's his. Mm-hmm. That's his mantra.
And it's reflective of his belief that right. what we saw in Week 18 is the true reality of what this team is.
Yes.
And in Week 17, before that, is they just totally decimated and destroyed the Lions. And in many ways, what should have been the week before that, if you just don't take a sack and you can make a 39-yard field goal.
That's right.
And
I mean, they should
you
have
could have, should have, would have won five of your last six.
That's right.
I mean, I'm not going to go back before that. But, you know, that's as Russell kind of got back and got his footing as a first-year coordinator. And that was my tweet after the game, right? A first-round bust blossoms into the best running back in the league. A first-time coordinator figures it out down the stretch. The line of scrimmage actually looks the way, you know, they anticipated it looking. And with that, you won 4 of 6 and very, very, very easily should have won 5 of 6 down the stretch.
And played their best football playing Pete Carroll's philosophy. Running the ball, Russell Wilson with the deep plays coming off of the explosive plays built off the running game, a defense doing what was supposed to. I mean, by the way, if Russ doesn't have two just, I mean, unspeakable turnovers in the Arizona game.
Yeah.
They dominate. I mean, that game's a
could have been
blowout.
A Detroit score too.
It could have been. I mean, that could have been a complete. That could have been a 30-point victory.
Yeah,
they dominated that game. You other tried than Russell
to.
Wilson.
You tried to on Monday. This is just my hunch. You tried to on Monday with Pete bring him into the Heaps Salk duel after the fact, right? You had your duel with Jake last Thursday. You tried to have Pete entertain a little bit of that duel, didn't you? Didn't you ask Pete kind of philosophically, you know, everything that he believes mm-hmm. and the balance that he believes in? And does the quarterback
believe in it also?
Correct.
Yeah, I tried. He didn't go there.
He had a blast last night. He loved that football game. He doesn't care what the numbers are. He really doesn't. He just wants to win. And watch, look at him. You know, that's who he is. He said that 1,000 times to me. He just wants to win. And so whatever we got to do it. And there's nothing. It's not like we're running the ball so that Russell doesn't get to throw. We're running the ball so he can kill him when he throws the football. And that's the point. And so he gets it.
Howdy, in his fantastic wisdom, made a promo of essentially that answer that ran as soon as the show ended. On Monday, right?
Uh-huh.
I don't know how you did it, but Howdy, who was in charge of those things around here.
He's got that methodology.
He's
deviant.
he uses his hotkeys. And,
yes.
Yeah. So Howdy had that running literally minutes after Pete said it, the second the interview ended.
What to say.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. Howdy's in charge here. And I listened to it, and I kind of slammed my headphones down. I was super mad at myself. Because I think really what I missed there, and I is the follow-up question should have been, that's great after a win. That's great when it works. Is he on board with it when it doesn't?
Yeah.
And shame on me, I should have asked it. And in 6 months, when we get to talk to Pete again, maybe I or somebody else will remember to ask him at that point. And I apologize as the interviewers that I didn't get to that question. I should have. The other question I wanted to get to there... was not just about how Russ handles those things, but was about have you done enough to commit to your own philosophy? Mm. Or have you wavered from it at times or compromised at times? And those are probably, you know, look, it's a 20-minute interview, and I know that sounds like a lot of time. There's a lot to get to. If I could have a do-over myself, those are two things that I'm critical of myself for, right? Tell the truth to Wednesday here.
Yep.
I'll tell the truth. I wish that I had asked those two questions. I think they would have been really helpful. I don't know what kind of answers they would have gotten. I mean, you know how it is. Sometimes you shoot your shot. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. But if I could have that interview over again, the second question was on my list, and I just wasn't able to get to it. The first one, I should have heard it, and I should have reacted that way, and it wasn't until I heard it a second time that it occurred to me. But I think those are really the key answers. How does Russ, Russ loves it when you win. He does love to win. Does he believe in you and your philosophy when it doesn't work? Like all philosophies sometimes don't work. You're not going to go 17-0. So that's one question. And then the second is, have you unfortunately deviated too much at times, compromised too much at times, allowed it to get away from your balanced approach? And I think the answer to that, whether he would admit it or not, is yes.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would say that we do have historical evidence that when it has really gotten off the rails, 0-2 start, Shoddy's first year, let's throw it all over the yard. That is when Pete said, no. Right. When actually, as you to your point earlier, when he actually loses and has to
and your
bounce
quarterback,
back from losing.
Quarterback has 7 turnovers and 3 losses.
Yep.
Those are just the picks. There might have been some interceptions, or there might have been some fumbles, but 7 picks in 3 losses.
Okay. So you know I love Sharpies, right? You should see my desk right now. I've got so many Sharpies.
And you like the thin Sharpies, too, like the pen-like Sharpies.
Point. Oh, not the only thick, those. Right. Oh, you can't
the markers.
Do that.
The
I like the
ones,
markers.
Oh, those are 50s, 1950s. Get with it. Evolve. Crying out loud. Those are. Do you want big, fat sausage
Nothing
fingers?
Nothing screams modern like Sharpies.
Do you want big, Get fat sausage?
IPad.
Hey, do you want big, fat sausage fingers? Or do you want agile, athletic fingers? Give me a break.
I want banana hands.
Get to the find point Sharpies. That's what I have.
All right.
And I got a lot of them.
I've got an endorsement deal with Sharpie.
Yeah, well, I'm fine. I'm trying. NIL. And to your point, and actually it was Howdy earlier. So on my little notepad that I have in front of me, that I constantly take little notes and fun stuff in our conversations here, I have a red dot and a blue dot. What did you say earlier, Howdy?
It's There's like the Matrix. You want to listen to Pete Carroll in a press conference? He gives you the red pill line and the blue pill line. You take one path and you can hear the exact opposite thing from the exact same interview.
So I have a red pill and a blue pill, like a little pill, right next to two of that statement that Howdy made that promo out of. And I want you to honestly try to answer, all four of us, as best we can, try to answer this question. Because Pete in that interview said, Russell does not worry about his numbers. Pete Carroll in that interview said, all he wants to do is win. Do you believe that? I got a red dot, a red pill by Russell does not worry about his numbers. And I got a blue pill.
I'd like that to be the blue pill,
yeah,
please.
Flip that around.
If you don't mind.
Okay, hold on. Here, I'll scratch it out.
Russell cares about his numbers.
Yes,
and
Russell
that's the blue
cares
pill.
About his numbers. He cares about his numbers. He does.
Of course, he does.
He absolutely.
How is that
cares.
Even up for debate?
He's been on
covering
the record
for us. Obviously,
he's been on the record of saying it matters to him. He doesn't have one MVP vote. That's a number. That's an important number. That's a big time number
it's
to him.
A,
I want to be the MVP
win.
Of this league.
Yeah.
That's not a Super Bowl win. That is an MVP, and it is on his conscience, and he has said it publicly that, yeah, it bothers him that he doesn't have and has never gotten one MVP vote. MVP votes do come from winning. Aaron Rodgers will likely win it back-to-back years, and his team's won 13 games and got to the NFC title game last year, should get there again this year, maybe do a Super Bowl, but it's his gaudy, ridiculous video game numbers. Right at 40 touchdowns and 4 picks and just crazy.
You know what's
numbers
frustrating though is they do. Russell could put up 40 touchdowns and 4 picks in Pete's system. He's not going to put up 4,500 yards, but he could put up 40 touchdowns or close to that and 4 picks. Right?
If they can run it like they ran it the last 6 weeks.
Yeah. Well. And if he doesn't make ridiculous turnovers like he did the last week or two,
or if Rashad Penny after 3.5 years of hibernating in his den finally wakes up and says I can be elite, okay, I think
I swear to God I'm going to fight you over Rashad Penny. You are ridiculous. You are merciless for a person whose career went belly up because of injuries.
Thank you.
I know you believe you're from some high horse place where you're the all-time expert on what it means to get over injuries, and because you try to make it seem like it was your fault, and you're an accountability guy.
Yes.
All you want to do is call Rashad Penny fat and say that it's his own fault that he got hurt all the time, which is why he's bad. And you're awful. You couldn't be worse.
Howdy
to Rashad
and Kyle,
Penny.
Have I ever uttered those words
verbatim?
F-A-T. Have I ever said that about him? Absolutely not.
Brock.
Absolutely. Positively.
Brock.
Has
not.
Never called him fat.
Thank you.
Last week when Mike said he was 230 pounds, you said, I don't know. Maybe 240. Listen,
240.
You got the Rashad Penny sound? From the locker room on Monday?
He's going to try not to eat too much.
He's told us in the past McDonald's was a problem.
Yes.
But you don't believe, what? Like, you just said he's hibernating like he's some sort of fat bear.
He hibernated for 3.5 years.
No, he was hurt.
And he came out like
he
a savage grizzly beast
hurt.
And
Brock.
Was unbelievable.
Don't gain too much weight.
And why was he hurt, Mike? Why was his body unable to sustain the NFL season?
Correct.
Tore his ACL.
No. Before the ACL. Groin, hammy, calf, right? I mean, do not tell me.
A lot of that was after the ACL.
Do not.
Gaining too much weight.
A lot of that was after the ACL.
That his care for his body had nothing to do with his injuries.
You're
don't
crazy,
tell me
you
that.
Because he's fat. He can't hit the holes. He's too slow.
I didn't
this
say
that.
He
you
was
say it
that.
All the time.
I never have said those words.
You're such a liar.
I
and
have
then,
never said F-A-T ever.
Yeah, well, you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Did you say heavy instead?
Yeah, he might be too big.
Oh, I'm sorry. You said heavy. You said big. You said wide. You said large.
Wait,
you
be
said
that quick.
Exactly. Oh, I'm sorry, you didn't use the exact three-letter word. You only found
Thank
every
you.
Euphemism for it possible.
Thank you. Very different.
Gosh, it's a wonder
fat
your kids
is,
don't have eating disorders the way you talk.
Fat is cutting. Fat is personal. I'm just talking about being big boned. You know, as Pete Carroll
no,
said
not.
About that one. Who did he say that about? Back
Alvin
in the
Bailey.
Yes.
Yeah, 350 bones.
We set him away. He just kept That's eating his way right over it.
But Rashad Penny came to life, Mike, the last 6 weeks,
sure
for
did.
Whatever reason, whether that's light at the end of the tunnel, whether it's in a contract
or
year, whether it is
Peterson.
Health and confidence and belief, whether it is
just,
Adrian Peterson. Health is one contributing
When Rashad Penny's been healthy, that's how he's looked. When Rashad Penny's been healthy, he had a couple of starts.
No,
but yes.
No.
Never looked
absolutely
like
not. No, he's shown flashes, but for 3.5 years,
in the years
Mike,
where Rashad,
in plays
in the
where there were
where
nothing
Rashad
there,
Penny was given the ball when he was the featured back, he's had 100 yards.
When there were holes there, he hit them and he made explosive plays for 3.5 years.
Yeah.
The last 6 weeks, he made a plant-based turn. And that is when there's nothing there, I can make something out of nothing.
Uh-huh.
I can make something out of nothing.
He did
That's
do more
what
of
he
that.
Did.
I would agree with that. He did do more of that. But to be fair, people talk about as if for 3.5 years, Rashad Penny was just like a crumpling heap. And like at the, you give him the ball, and when Carson was out and he was healthy, he succeeded. He put up 100-yard games. He would have big
runs. What was
runs.
Different about those 3.5 years compared to C.J. Procise? What was different between the two of them? C.J. Procise had 100-yard game, explosive plays.
No, Procise had one,
potential.
Literally one good game.
And unfortunately, he got hurt over and over and over and over and over again. Even more hurt and more injury prone than Rashad. Rashad's body, and I think the way he handled himself as a pro, he has said that, was not good enough his first couple years. Not good enough. And then, yes, a catastrophic injury at the end of year two certainly affected year three. And there is a story to be written, a blue pill and a red pill. Okay. And, but there is no debate. The last 6 weeks, he was the best running back in the NFL. And when he was, the hole is in the engine in the middle of it. Everybody, offense, defense, special teams benefited from it. And the quarterback more than anybody else. The end of that little narrative, Pete, is totally, totally 100% spot on, right? Just play the end of that, or play the whole thing again if you want, Howdy. I don't want Salk to throw his headsets, and he wants to punch me in the throat anyway. But play your promo again for me.
Oh, Pete's comments on
yes, I'm Russell.
Russell loving the game, loving that style.
Uh-huh.
He had a blast last night. He loved that football game. He doesn't care what the numbers are. He really doesn't.
No, he does. Yeah, he really does. And at the end of it as well, when he said, we don't run the ball just to run the ball. We run the ball so he can be a killer. and he can be an assassin. And that is what he was the last couple weeks. All the play action off of it. You actually get single high safety, as DK Metcalf said the week before. Mm-hmm. You actually, as Mark Schlereth talked about, aid your protection. You help your passing game. When you hit those guys in the mouth in their front seven, guess what? Were they anywhere near as aggressive? Arizona, same coordinator, same personnel. Watch like the last four games. Watch them, right? The blitz fest that it was. People in Russell's face when they couldn't run it. But when they could run it in week 18, look at what it did to set the table for everybody. Pretty incredible. And Rashawn was an enormous, enormous piece of it.
Why do you
and
have to call enormous?
Eat big fat,
and why
fat,
I will eat humble big pie. Fat words.
I will eat big fat humble pie. I will. I'll stuff it down my gullet.
Oh my god!
Which you want to punch right now? I'll eat it. I'll eat it, Mike. I'll eat it.
You're the worst. You are the worst.
I'll eat every bit of it because he was phenomenal the last 6 weeks.
He was
phenomenal.
Are you now? He's eating pho.
More,
is that part of it now?
More. Sure. What was that? What was that number you sent? More yards after contact.
That is a pretty legitimate thing.
Yes.
So he had more yards after contact in the last 5 weeks of the season than the next highest person had total yards. And that was Jonathan Taylor. That's crazy.
Crazy. Speaks to his explosiveness.
To speak to how early he's contacted?
Yes.
You?
I mean, maybe. Yeah. There's probably some of that.
But he breaks that tackle and two of them, and he takes it to the house. That's what he has. That's what Pete loves. That's what they coveted. That's why they took him in the first round, because he was a legitimate home run hitter.
Well, and what's crazy about it, I mean, look, you and I can argue about what you believe about his weight or not. He is a big running back. Please don't add weight to him, but he is at 235. Okay,
yep.
So let's agree that that's his actual weight. He's at 235. That's a big running back. And when you see him, that touchdown run he had at the end of the game, that's Buda Baker out there, right? He's a pretty sure tackler. I know everybody loves him because you know he was a Husky, Buda Baker?
What?
And for whatever reason, people around here love Huskies. And once they play in the NFL, they can't do anything wrong ever. Even if they get caught from behind by DK Metcalf, even if they get pushed to the ground and destroyed by Russell Wilson's shoulder like Buda Baker did on that play.
And what really stood out was Jalen Thompson's pick six. Woo. The other safety, the Coug safety.
of course.
Who also got ran over and injured by Rashawn.
But in that moment, on that touchdown run, Buda's got him, right? I mean, like, he just flat out outran Buda Baker.
Yes, he did.
At 235 pounds.
He still has that speed.
That is, I mean, honestly, ridiculous. That's why he was drafted where he
was
drafted. It's why they've been patient with him for 4 years. It's why they should bring him back next year and see what happens, because it's tantalizing, that speed and size combination.
No question about it. And it'll be very curious to see how he handles the open market. And if there is a, you know, not a discount. You should never take a discount. I don't tell any player to do that. And he was the one that performed for the final 6 weeks of the season. But if indeed Seattle is home, if indeed all of that patience and all of that belief and everything that they gave him and all of the treatment and all of the work and all of, you know, everything from the neck up and the neck down that they have done for him to put him in that position to excel, I certainly hope they get first right of refusal and a first option at that contract.
Well, and it sounds, I mean, he sure certainly sounded like he was in that mode after the game. Let me ask you this, though. And I know this is more of a Pete Russ conversation, but I'll get sidetracked for a moment. I have some difficulty bringing back both Chris Carson and Rashad Penny. And if I'm going to bring back Penny, I might cut Chris Carson.
Yeah.
And it's not personal. It's not.
You want Adrian Peterson's backup.
I don't want that. I'm good. But I think that if you're, look, both guys have major injury risks, and you'd be foolish to ignore their history and their past when it comes to that. And I don't think that I could go into it with both guys and the amount of risk. I think that if I'm going to bring back Rashad Penny because of the home run style, I think that I think I'm got to find somebody else who I can be who I can rely on a little
bit
more.
You're just as likely to lose both of those guys in the same game for the rest of the season as you are to have any of them at the end.
Yeah,
of the year.
I kind of agree. And honestly, whereas Penny feels like, and maybe this is just, you know, prisoner of the moment, feels like he's turned a corner and may now have an opportunity to be healthy moving forward. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Carson's never done that. And it just every year it's another thing. And now this neck thing seems to be chronic. And like, that makes me arguably more nervous. And as much as I love Chris Carson's style, and he still has, other than the Marshawn Lynch, two gigantic runs, he has my favorite touchdown of any Seahawks player since I moved to Seattle. when he was stopped against San Francisco and Rabel's like, oh, there you go. They lose it on fourth down. And he just kept driving his leg. Oh, my God. He's in the end zone.
Carrying 500 pounds on his back.
That's my
end zone.
I mean, other than the two Beastquake touchdowns, that is my favorite touchdown that the Seahawks have scored since I've moved to Seattle. What, 13 years or whatever it is now?
If Pete Carroll wants to get back to his style and his philosophy, Chris Carson is a cornerstone. Big number 32 looking so good out.
But unfortunately, he doesn't stay healthy either. And
if it's health, then Rashad Penny should be out with the bathwater.
But I don't know that you... I'm not saying that you can't have one of those two guys, but if you've got to choose...
Pete's choosing Chris Carson.
I don't know if that's true. Not with the neck injury the way it is. I think you're choosing Rashad Penny.
If he had to choose, and by the way...
He likes explosive plays, Kyle. As much as Pete likes a bell cow or somebody who's going to go hit you, he likes explosive plays, man.
Yes, he does.
It's all he'll talk about. He will point to the 25-yard plus plays, 20-yard plus plays. He will point. He did it with me on Monday. They had more explosive plays in the running game against Arizona than the Cardinals had overall.
Yep.
Pete loves explosive plays in the running game, loves a home run hitter. Mm-hmm. It's why he was loyal to stupid injury guy. What's his name? CJ Prosize. Pete loves a home run hitter. He likes Reggie Bush.
Pete doesn't like soft players, though.
Well, I would agree with that. I love soft players.
Can I steer us back then? Can I steer us back to Pete and the moment, possibly today, this day, and the decision making moving forward? You said right there, if Pete has his say, if Pete has to choose, is Pete going to be able to keep choosing?
What do you think?
I think there's going to have to be some change after this season. Mm-hmm. When he said to you, as far as this coaching staff right now, he and John, I cannot imagine after a 7-10 season and many of those weeks where there was no answers for what was going on and just some of the tumult and some of the challenge and the difficulty and just, you know, whether this program is ascending, descending, staying flat, all of those things that Jody and her team are going to evaluate. I do not think at the end of that analytics and evaluation, her and her team are going to say, yep, status quo. Just keep it good.
Right.
Let's just bring the whole crew back together.
But
the NFL has, what, 7 of 32 turned over right now as far as head coaches go? Pete's done it 12 years. I would not want Pete out the door as a head coach. But I think there's going to have to be consideration for something that you said, Salk, about week, 9 or 10, when you were like, I'm done. I'm done with these little tents and which tent you're in. Just do your job. You remember that little on the podcast?
Yeah. I don't think I said it like that, but yeah.
You pretty much said it.
Yeah.
I don't think so. You pretty much said, hey, just do your job. Just stay in your silo and do your job.
I think I said it more like that, yes.
And Pete, you know what? You're a coach and you're a culture builder. Do that. Hey, John Schneider, you're the personnel guy, and you may need a new voice in there. You may need some whatever. You may need restructuring. Whatever you need to do your job, or simply keep Pete out of doing your job. Do your job, and Russ, go quarterback this team and go win games. That's what you named your son after. Go win and go stay on the field and go win. John, go draft. Go bring people in. Go acquire. Go be creative. Go trade. Go do those things that you are gifted to do. And Pete, build your culture. And you know what? Backs against the wall, down a number of guys at the end of the year. Your culture went out. Guys love to play. Dudes love to play. That broadcast couldn't get enough. Shannon Spake, my old coworker on the sidelines, and Schlereth up in the booth, and Adam and me couldn't get enough about bragging about your team and everything they were playing for when they had nothing on paper to play for. Go do your job as a culture builder. And I think that is going to be, honestly, you said it ahead of anybody else. And if her team was listening at all, and I don't know what that team looks like, I think that is absolutely what needs to happen. And Pete, just coach. And if indeed it's been a problem and none of us have been in the war room, none of us been in contract talks, none of us been negotiation, none of us have actually been there, but through 12 years of covering this team and knowing the way they operate, I think there has been probably a time or two where this isn't healthy. Isn't healthy to be this loose. And you know what, John? If we gave you an extension to 2027, you've got to be at the forefront. You've got to lead. You've got to build the personnel. I think that change could be coming.
I'm going to start imitating you as much as you imitate me. I'm not wild about the way you imitate me.
I don't like a lot of liberties taken.
Right, a lot. Like,
do you see how much not very huffy.
Like, I don't think I said
it. I just heaped a lot of praise on you.
Like, I don't have. I don't think I do that. I think what it was do
oh,
your
you
job.
You don't think you do?
I think
you don't
what
think
it was
you sound
is
like that?
Do your job, not somebody else's job, your job. I think that's how it was said, and that's what I meant, and I still believe it today. John, do your everything you just said, but better, is what I think. I mean, that's what I said, as you said, week 10. I appreciate you biting my comments and now using them as your own here after the season.
I'm giving you praise for those.
Kind of.
Yeah,
no, you're
sort of a mocking
what?
Tone.
Right, you're sort
no!
of.
No! Ow! Okay, let me say it clearly.
Why don't you say it? No, not clearly, nicely.
Salk, you were right.
Thank you.
Week 10,
we go.
It was clear. Go back and play the tape. You were emotional.
I heard the tape.
You were passionate.
I sound like Ugga.
It's why we all love you, because you were passionate. And yeah, you didn't say it in the grovelly tone that I did, but you just said very flat out,
yes,
they've got to get
back
job. In their
Everyone
lanes
should do their
and
job.
Do their job.
Why?
Boogity, boogity, boogity. Let's talk sports, boys. Oh, what a beautiful marriage you have. Uh-huh. Rock steps back, says, honey, you were right.
Yes.
You said it right all along. I should have realized it at the time. I do now.
Yes.
That's a beautiful relationship.
And then Salk comes at me and is like, no, your tone is all wrong.
Yes.
I didn't say it like that.
Right.
I'm trying to heap praise on you, and I still can't.
It's not what you say, it's how you say it.
Yeah. That's right. Oh, okay. Brock, how many times have I told you? It's not what you say, it's how you say it. Do you think they can do that? So I agree that Jody Allen's got to say that. Do you think everyone can agree to do that? Can
yeah.
they, or are some of the egos and
nope.
some of the, you know, sure not everyone, and you sure they're not all too fragile?
I don't think so. I think John Schneider's one of the most egoless people in his position in the league, of his standing and of his winning and everything else. And for 12 years, it's Pete and Russ that get all the headlines, and the byline is John Schneider. Right. Oh, and the draft in 12 was great, but McLuhan was part of it. Blah blah blah. And he has never. You've never heard him in the media spin. Give me credit. We've never felt that for 12. I think his ego is not an issue at all, and I think empowering him, and you did it last year by extending him to 2027, is best business. And Pete, I'm sorry. You are emotional. You're an amazing culture builder, but you are an emotional guy. You do bounce all over four of these walls. And you know what? You've got to stay in your office, and we got to let John and the scouting department do their job, and you will not intervene. And what? And again, none of us have been privy to the war room. From what I understand, it is totally detailed. They separate emotion. It's business. But you've got to let John do that business in every
right.
facet
well,
of building the personnel.
I appreciate your thoughts on Pete and John. We'll have to cover Russ and his fragility and his ego a little later, because next you're going to tell me Russell Wilson's the egoless
Mm-mm.
quarterback in the NFL. And
no,
I hope
I
you're
not
about to go there, because that's
no,
just
I will not.
Not true.
Absolutely will not
but
do that.
Do you think that the tension between coaching staffs and personnel decisions is the single biggest point of friction in the NFL?
I asked you this morning on the show, and I don't know if we'll get into it next segment with leadership.
We plan to.
But that's at the center of it. I mean, yeah, I think that is one of the hardest to sustain. That, maybe head coach and quarterback relationship. Because if Belichick and Brady can divorce with 6 titles...
I mean,
that one is
almost 20 years, but yeah.
That one's very fragile. That one can be very difficult.
Well, that's why I asked about fragility and whether it's ego or whether it's, I don't know exactly what the right reasoning behind it is. Everything in the NFL always seems built on fragility. And by the way, that's not just the,
is
excuse
it
me, that's not just the NFL. It's all
fragility.
Sports. It's all sports. Why do you don't see it in baseball anymore? Because the front offices have won. They've defeated the managers. There is no more tension between the managers and the GMs, because the managers don't mean squat. They just do the bidding of the GMs. Billy Beane and the Moneyball revolution.
Right?
Literally everything.
Game.
The manager, yeah, you don't like it? See ya. We'll go find some bum off the street, stick him in there, and we'll be fine. They do not care about the managers at all. That war has been fought and lost. And now it is the GMs and the front offices who are 100% in charge. There is no more battle to be fought there. But in football, there is, because the coach is so much more involved than a baseball manager is and does so many more things. And they're just completely different positions. And I would argue, and in some ways, it's the coach who has more power generally. The coaches, I think, are the ones who have been winning that war over the player personnel folks mm-hmm. in the front offices. So the tensions in those two sports have gone in different directions. But I think you're kind of at a point now where, like, that is the tension in the NFL.
We will dig into this a little further in our little leadership conversation next, because I wrote a few notes down. But let's also remember what happened last offseason. After a difficult season, unlike any other that New England has had for two decades, what did Bill do? Bill said, okay, all right, can't do it all. I'm going to get back to coaching. And he empowered his front office after a lot of bad drafts, after a lot of bad decisions in the acquisition side, a lot that Tom Mast and had a brutal year. And after it said, okay, go ahead. Not that, you know, I'm going to give up everything, but he relented big time and empowered his personnel people to help build back that team, which they did into a playoff team this year with a rookie quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, are you going to say that to Service?
Ooh, that he's
meaningless? Next time you golf with him?
No, I don't think so. I don't think I'm going to take
You're
a
just
shot.
A pup.
No, the next time you guys golf or you all get together, right? He does with this with the local guys. Hey, I was thinking, do you realize that you've lost the war? It is the general manager.
You know why? You know why?
I'll punch you in your face.
You know why I wouldn't say that?
Uh-huh.
I mean, other than self-preservation, he doesn't come from managing and coaching. He comes from front office.
It's true.
That's literally the path he took to get to the job he's in.
True.
He literally came from being in a front office to being the manager of the Mariners. So, I mean, like he knows.
He understands. Yeah, he does.
Yeah,
he understands.
I mean, I think a lot more. That fight has been pretty well won at this point in baseball, but clearly it's still a major, major factor in the NFL. And you see it. Bill O'Brien is getting interviewed again by the Jags. What do you say? Oh, you know, the last time it was personnel that was the problem. I'm not even going to think about personnel again. Uh-huh. For how long?
Right.
6 months?
Right.
Seven? How long before Bill O'Brien decides that he's got to have a bigger say in personnel? What just happened with Brian Flores?
Mm-hmm.
Right, personnel. You know who it is, by the way, who he was clashing with? Bobby Greer's son. You know who Bobby Greer is?
Yeah, he was with the New England Patriots.
And you know who he is most responsible for disempowering?
Sending out the door.
One Peter Carroll. I mean, Pete was in New England, and Pete's version of that story is the players had a back stairway right up to Bobby Greer, who had the mm-hmm. ear of Bob Kraft, and the reason things didn't work out for Pete in New England was not because he was too rah-rah, it was because he didn't have control, and Bobby Greer did. And now here you go, here's his son, not Mike Greer, his other son, who was an NHL player. This is a different Greer son, I forget this kid's name, but he's the GM in Miami, and apparently that's where the clash is.
Wow.
It's amazing how these come full circle. Kyle, you want to talk a little Famous Dave's? I know how much you love talking about the Ghost Kitchens up in Northgate, obviously. All the barbecue classics to satiate any comfort food craving anyone might have this time of year. It's been raining every day since, I don't know.
Oh, it was nice on Saturday. There was that one Saturday.
October 30th.
I heard it was
the
nice
November
on Sunday,
and December,
but I actually didn't go outside, so I didn't see it. I was just watching football
watching
all day.
Golf?
Yeah, no, I was watching, well, a little golf, yeah, obviously.
Kapalua.
But yeah, comfort food time of year. You want a feast for two? Half rack of ribs. Half a country roasted or barbecue chicken. Which way are you going there?
Barbecue.
Country roasted chicken or barbecue chicken?
You can't lose.
That's true. Texas beef brisket or Georgia chopped pork, plus creamy coleslaw, Famous fries, Wilbur beans, sweet corn, cornbread muffins, serve family style for 2 to 3 for just $49.99. Appetizers from the Memphis style dry rub tips, Texas beef brisket, burnt ends. Brock, how are you doing with your burnt ends?
Awesome.
Dave's sampler platter, appetizer, rib tips, chicken strips, onion strings, wings, tossed in your choice of sauce. Don't forget the refreshing Dave's sassy barbecue salad, sandwiches, burgers, even dessert like the award-winning bread pudding. Howdy, in on bread pudding?
Always.
Cooked a ton over the holidays? Anybody? Anybody cooked too much over the last month?
Yes.
We'll allow the experts in barbecue to handle all of the hard work here in January. You can order online at FamousDaves.com to get your Q curbside or delivered. The locations are in Everett, in Tukwila, in Tacoma, or
that Ghost Kitchen,
hit up that Ghost Kitchen in Northgate. Stay warm famously this winter with Famous Dave's Barbecue. So, Brock, you asked me this question, and I've been trying to come up with a good answer for it. And there are, I think, some reasonable sort of based in logic answers, but I think the bigger picture leads to so many cool conversations. So you asked me why there's so much coaching turnover, essentially, in the NFL.
Yes, seven. depending on how you want to characterize the Raiders job and whether you think the special teams coach, who's done a phenomenal job, is just going to be elevated into the head job, or is Mark Davis going to go the route of his late father and hire 33-year-old Kellen Moore, because that's what Al did. He just always hired young and wanted young. So 7 of 32, which is about, you know, so it's seemingly always about 5 to 7 of 32 head coaching jobs turnover every year.
The super young guy that Al Davis hired all those years ago is like a really good defensive coordinator now, right? Dennis Allen? Isn't he like one of the best coordinators in the league?
Same thing.
Correct.
Yeah, he hired Lane Kiffin. He's like,
I remember that. But like Dennis Allen was like, who is this? At least I'd heard of Lane Kiffin. Dennis Allen was a complete nobody, no name, nothing. And where is he now?
The Saints D coordinator.
He's like a really good D coordinator now. Yeah, I'm sure he is. 30 years later.
Decade.
It's got to be 20 years almost, isn't it, since Dennis Allen was there?
No, not that long.
15?
Maybe over 10.
I bet it's 15. It might be 10. I bet he was there before you and I started doing our show together. I bet you Dennis Allen was the head coach of the Raiders in like 2006.
I don't think so, because I think he was hired and you had no idea. Dennis Allen, is he a CPA?
Maybe.
Yeah.
He does
kind of sound like a CPA.
Yes. Hired in 2012.
Okay. So I guess it was a little later. I guess we were doing the show. All right. Well, shows what I know. In any event, why is there so much turnover? Some of it is logic, Brock. There's 32 teams, and 5 to 7 of them are going to be so bad that they need to turn over. It's not working. Mm-hmm. Right? Just as simple as that, right? Like, hey, sorry, this is a results-based business, and your results aren't good. Apparently, in the modern NFL, 2 out of 32, so that's 1 out of 16, will either be so overtly stupid or racist or sexist or incapable of communicating with human beings in the modern society that they have to be let go as well. So that counts for 2, and then you've got another few who are going to just be at the bottom of the list. So that's one way of looking at this question, but it's not the most interesting way, obviously, of looking at the question. The reality is, why is it so hard to be a head coach in the modern NFL?
It's brutal. I have said this about the collegiate job, that what it requires, and then talking to Chris Peterson both on and off the air and on and off the record, and you know, the challenge, if you thought of anybody that could be a CEO at the collegiate level, Chris Peterson would like check every single box, from experience and everything you just said, the opposite of treating people incredibly well, genuinely a good human being, genuinely caring about people, putting together good staffs and being able to recruit and get into a family's home. And even he was like, yep, I'm out. I just, just on a bus and I'm just running through life and I'm not living life and I'm out of that job. And that's the collegiate level. The NFL level, Mike, the more that I think about it, I think what is asked of them today from a leadership perspective is so daunting and so challenging, and why so many of them get canned. Because you are not only leading 53 men. Well, it's even more than that now with practice squads. So it's over 60 men. You are now leading enormous staffs, more than ever before. Assistant coach, assistant to the assistant coach, analysts. You now have owners and their crew and their entourages that are bigger than ever, more vocal than ever, and you've got to gain their trust and be able to lead with them. You have a media that is expanded, that's no longer, if I get one guy in my hip pocket, man, if I get the local columnist to believe in me in town, you've got how many that cover your team. You've got fans that are now more engaged, more interactive, more connected with the players than ever before. It is just an unbelievably daunting task of leadership, of however you want to quantify or qualify leadership in that way. But to try to be able to manage and lead all of those relationships, good luck.
Yeah,
I was listening, and some of this, by the way, and let me just say, some of this, I was chatting and listening to Chad Brown, old Seahawk linebacker, and he's in the media and you know, does a little college and NFL games on radio. And I was listening to him say, you know, I did the interim thing. I was an interim coach at training camps, even with the Seahawks. And he's like, I mean, it's not just leading a team meeting anymore. Those coaches got to go in there and lead grown men who are all also either ascending, descending, looking out for their own jobs. And it's not just anymore the position coaches, right? That table used to be pretty small. It used to be a secondary coach, a linebacker coach, a D-line coach. It used to be a receiver coach, an O-line coach, a running back coach, maybe a tight ends coach, special team. You had like 8. And now those rooms, when you watch Hard Knocks, they can't even fit everybody in the room.
Right, yeah, you got so many people.
So many voices.
And with so many conflicting interests, and as you said, generations, plus you got to manage up to an owner, you got to manage out to a fan base, you got to deal with the media, you got to be the face of the organization.
Oh, and by the way, what you said too, you got to be married to your personnel department.
That's right, and you better find a quarterback that works, or else you're definitely going to get canned, because there aren't enough of those to go around. And when you do find one, you better find a way to keep them happy, right? You're right. It's an incredibly challenging, difficult job. It's one of the reasons I think anybody would be insane to move on from Pete Carroll, because he's one of the few people who have shown a mastery of it and ability to do it year after year with success in multiple different places.
As you say that, I'm writing some notes down. Andy Reid, right, mm-hmm. right at the top of the list of guys doing it. Mike Tomlin, getting the Pittsburgh Steelers this year into the playoffs, right at the top of the list. Bill Belichick, obviously the best of the best. Pete, those guys who have been able to do it. There's a common characteristic. Sean Payton's absolutely on that list amongst those five guys in particular right there. And you know what it is? And you know why Dan Quinn is absolutely, unequivocally the best candidate of anybody on the market? Because those five, including Pete, all know each other, all know who they are.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Andy.
They do all know each other.
How's the fam?
Yeah, they all know each other when they get whenever they get to take another coach's picture at the coaches' meetings, when they can actually gather in person. Those guys know each other. All the others that come in and out the door, they don't. But those that do, A, know each other, but much more importantly, they know themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They absolutely know everything
they
about
know who
they don't
are.
Have it's to not, pretend
yeah. yep.
when they're managing up or managing out or managing a relationship with the personnel. They don't have to pretend to be anything. They know exactly who and what
and
they
frankly,
are.
Frankly, I asked Matt Hasselbeck today why he thinks Mike Vrabel has had some success in doing that and as a very young head coach. And that was very much his answer, like very confident in who he wants to be, a very clear identity and able to communicate it well of this is what I want to be. And whereas Joe Judge may have thought he wanted that and thought correct. He had that, it doesn't feel right. And by the way, once you lose the New York media, good luck.
Yep.
Are you just you can't get it back. Once the New York media has you in their clutches, you're done.
Yep.
You might as well retire and go home. You will never, ever escape what they are going to do to you. And eventually it took their toll. That's what will probably happen to Dan Campbell and some of these other guys who are trying and maybe putting it on. Whereas, you know, Pete and Andy Reid, some of those guys you just mentioned, mm-hmm. Bill, it's just real. They are
yes.
who they are.
They know exactly who they are.
Very authentic.
And it comes through experience. I don't think Andy Reid knew that year one or two in Philadelphia like he does now, decades in. I don't think Pete Carroll knew that in New England and New York the way that he did in Seattle after his experience at USC.
Yeah, I think that's all very real. Yes, I would agree with that. But you also better have a quarterback. You better have a good relationship with your player personnel department. Like you better win because you can't just do all of those other things.
The other thing
I've been thinking about with Pete, and maybe it kind of focuses down in there, is and you brought it up earlier with sort of the coordinators and the coaching staff under him. I talked a little bit about this on the show. Maybe it was yesterday. But do you think that, like, I think that at 70 years old, Pete's got plenty of energy, right? I mean, certainly that's not in doubt. Take a look at the picture of him throwing his face in front of the camera and the one that DK Metcalf retweeted and was like, that's my coach. Like, no one's questioning Pete Carroll's energy level.
Especially since his plant-based turn.
I think anybody should be questioning his leadership ability or culture-building ability. I don't really care that much about what kind of a scheme and X's and O's guy he is, because I'm not really sure that's the main job of an NFL coach. But okay, I still think Pete knows the game of football inside and out, and he kind of knows what he's seeing and what to do with it. I do wonder, and I don't know if this is an age thing or just how long he's been around or whether it's not something he's focused on. Is Pete out there knowing the next up and coming coaching kids?
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, and you've brought it up, Brock, saying that they haven't had as many of those guys who are, you know, being sought after by other organizations. I could see how that would get harder and harder as you get older and older to stay in touch, not with what's going on in the game, but on who are the people that are figuring it out and where to go find the next generation of coach and how to hire them so that you are not, you know, caught behind, playing from behind in terms of the scheme and the X's and O's. I don't believe that's the head coach's job to scheme that stuff. Belichick is the outlier, and maybe because he's so incredible at every single part of being a head coach that's why he's the best of all time. That's why they should name the Lombardi after him. But Pete's got a different set of skills.
Yes.
What he's got to figure out, I think, to evolve and move forward is not how to compromise his scheme, because he shouldn't do that. Pete should not compromise his philosophy anymore. He should lean into it, not away from it, I believe. but he probably needs to lean into finding more people that are creative in the next generation.
Yes.
So that, because I don't know where he finds those guys right now. It seemed like Shane Waldron took an act of God to bring him in here. And I don't know whether he's the right guy or not, but finding more people, just even of his generation, seems like a pretty important task.
His coaching tree at USC was so flush with blossoming fruit. Lane Kiffin, Ed Orgeron, Steve Sarkisian, right? You just looked at it. The number of coaches that just blossomed there.
Yes.
Early in Seattle, the number of coaches that, you know, blossomed. Gus Bradley and Dan Quinn and Chris Richard from a position coach, Robert Saleh. It was, I think if I'm Jody Allen, again, in this day of evaluation and critiquing and analyzing every aspect of it, that is a legitimate question.
I think it is, too. And you know who his other, and this is goes in the other direction, but I think it's another thing that I would think about if I were Pete Carroll, who was his defensive coordinator during that time at USC. Not a young buck, not a young kid, right? It was Monty Kiffin, right? One of the oldest guys around. I mean, literally the guy who invented the Tampa 2.
And is Monty Kiffin an amazing leader, or is he an X's and O's guy?
Unbelievable coordinator.
Right. And what I think is most interesting about the Monty Kiffin thing is, and this is for everybody who says that Pete's so stuck in his ways and this and that, Monty Kiffin literally plays a different defense than Pete Carroll plays. Monty Kiffin's the guru Tampa of the two. Tampa 2. He invented
it. Yep.
Pete's known for the single high safety cover three, right?
Yep.
I mean,
they
like,
just took the seven guys on the back end and zone covered it totally differently.
Right.
One was a 1-3-1 basketball. One was a 2-3 zone. But they
but that's
both
awfully interesting, right?
It is.
Like for however long he had success there, Pete was working with a guy with a completely different view.
Yes.
So, A, I agree with you. There's got to be some more of the next generation, Steve Sarkisians and Dan Quinns
and Gus Bradley and Chris Richards. And you need that.
But also, and I mentioned this name a few years ago, and I'm not sure he's still the right guy for it. But bringing in the Wade Phillipses or somebody who comes in with a different view, who's got experience and has the cachet to be able to say, hey, this is what I think we should do. I think there's a lot of relevance there to bringing in some folks like that as well and really trying to create some level of, I don't want to call it friction, but it's almost that positive friction. The iron sharpens iron. Get a lot of different views of smart people together and see what happens.
Yep.
I think there's room for that.
I'm just drawing and doodling here a beautiful tree with roots and everything. It's pretty cool. I'm thinking now, and then some of this is out loud, but haven't Andy Reid's guys, hasn't he continued to blossom New England? Hasn't Bill continued to blossom and Jerod Mayo's even getting an interview for a head coaching job as a inside linebacker coach? Like I think that is a real measurement of the health of your program. Obviously, when you win, people want yours, right? When you want, but unfortunately, like even when you were 12-4 and you won, Shoddy got fired, and it was, you know, come be a QB coach for Urban,
yeah,
right. I mean, it just it's surprising, and I think it is a bit telling, and I think there is more to dig into. If I, again, am the owner making decisions of, hey, we do need, it's not going to be totally status quo. We need a little bit of a shakeup. And I think that is a legitimate question. Mm-hmm. The hunger, the drive, the striving of your assistants. Do you have assistants that are just, hey, man, I'm happy to be here, man. I'm happy. Are you kidding me? We get to be here 12 years and in this most unstable job, I'm good. I don't need to go. I don't need to ascend. I don't need to climb. I don't need to grow anymore. I'm just, let me just be in this. Or do you want guys that are, no, man, my DB coach, I want to ascend to be a D coordinator. My D coordinator, I want to ascend to be a head coach. I want those guys constantly striving and driving, as do players. I think that is a legitimate question over the last 4 or 5 years in Seattle.
I guess spent a couple of minutes, Mark. I've been like just dying to talk about this with anybody. So you can leave if you want. I'll talk about it by myself. Talk
Nobody
about
will listen to Mike. It's getting really sad.
It's
just like, hey, so Harry's just on the sidewalk. So you hear about that? Okay,
he's wearing a sandwich board, walking around all over the place.
Extra,
no one will get
extra.
All right. This Baseball America thing. I generally don't like go crazy for these their reports and stuff like that. But this particular one kind of blew me away. So they just came out with their maybe I'm just so desperate for baseball conversation this time of year that I'm looking for anything, but they came out with their Mariners top 10 prospect list, and that in and of itself is not particularly interesting, but the two at the top of their list, obviously Julio Rodriguez, since Kelnick is no longer eligible, and some of those guys, where it was Julio and it was George Kirby. Okay.
Ooh. Okay.
So I don't know about, you know, on the Julio, read the chat. Go read the chat from the Baseball America guy. His comment about Julio is, potential is top five player in the game.
Yeah, and the wet blanket loves him too.
It's not like, oh yeah, he could be a really good player. He could be an all-star. Mm-hmm. What did Keith Law tell us about Kyle? Oh, he could win a batting title or two. No, it was like top five player in the game. Comparable to Fernando Tatis Jr., Vlad Guerrero Jr., Acuna, Trout. You're talking top five player in the game. Okay? So that's the like the projection on Julio. Doesn't mean he gets there, but like that's what he's capable of.
And that wasn't
of
even and that wasn't Kelenic even.
No.
When Kelenic was on that
was
list.
Considered top rung, which is like top 30 players in the game. Yep. One of the best players on every team.
Yes. But this is top five player in baseball.
Generational.
Yes. Okay. Potential. Doesn't mean he's there. So obviously that is just, you know, incredible, and you got to get you incredibly excited. I feel like so much of our conversation, not just for us, but just sort of the general conversation about the Mariners has been Kelenic and Julio, Kelenic and Julio, Kelenic and Julio, Kelenic and Julio.
And
then, oh, by the way, they've got a great group of pitchers, right? And no one's sleeping on it. It's always been they've got a great deep group of pitchers. But if I asked you, Brock, who's better? Who projects to be better? Sam, you know, George Kirby or Emerson Hancock?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a clear idea who's supposed to be better?
No, I know. I've always felt, and maybe unfairly so.
Or Logan Gilbert, throw him in too.
Or Marte, even a non-pitcher.
Well, he's not a pitcher, but just have a group of pitchers.
Just
Brandon Williamson. Like, did you have a sense, like, of really the major differences between the pitchers?
Slightly, as far as upside. Yeah. And Kirby was always the safe pick. He was always unbelievable control.
Mm-hmm.
He just doesn't walk people. But he was never the ceiling of, oh my gosh, of what people love today, which is velo, 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 velo.
Well, and he changed that. Because he put on some muscle, not like bad way. He didn't get big, but he got kind of ripped. And he started throwing like, you know, mid to high 90s in the last year or so. And so Baseball America, A, said that his ceiling is of an ace. Not a good pitcher, an ace pitcher. A legitimate number one ace pitcher on a good staff.
Is Logan Gilbert, by the way, did Logan expire?
Like, they have Logan. He's not a prospect anymore. They have him as like a number.
He expired.
They think he's like a number three pitcher. Yes.
He's a top of the rotation upside. That's not ace.
Right. They are saying that this kid is an ace. Ace level talent. Best pitcher on your team on a good roster and a good rotation. They also, so you know, they get the stupid 20-80 scale, which of course makes no sense to anybody. It's the most baseball thing of all time. But so 20-80 scale where 80 is the highest. He gets a 75 fastball, which is nuts. I mean, that in and of itself is crazy.
And by context, they only do increments of 5. You can't go anything other than 5s or
0s. That's right. It goes 20, 25, 30, 30. It's like somebody calling a touchdown.
Only 5.
Except it goes up to 80, right?
On the scale of blue to pink, as all baseball players are evaluated.
So bizarre. Anyway, he's a 75 fastball and an 80 control. I don't know that I've ever seen anyone rated an 80 in anything in those Baseball America things. I'm sure they've been out there, and probably if I went back and looked at Vlad's power, Tatis's speed, or whatever it is, I'm sure I'd find some of that. But like,
that's like Moyer command.
Does Julio have any 80?
They said the comp in there, I don't think so, no. The comp in there was essentially with that kind of fastball and that kind of command, you're looking at 2021 Jacob DeGrom.
Wow.
So, yeah, this is why I kind of will keep shouting at anybody who will talk to me about this for like a minute, because I was kind of under the impression, maybe this is on me. Yeah, you got Hancock and you got Kirby and you got this guy and you got that guy. You got Williamson who's kind of got himself in there and people are excited about Brash now. And, you know, there's a bunch of these dudes. Maybe Sam Carlson can figure it out after all the time off. But it's not like that. Those guys are good and really, really highly thought of. This kid's different. He's being thought of, at least by Baseball America, in a completely different way. So when you start thinking like, oh, okay, maybe they need to make a deal with the A's and they should trade for, they should put a package together and get Matt Chapman and Sean Manaea. Okay, or Manaea. How does he pronounce it?
Manaea.
Okay, Sean Manaea. Don't just be like, all right, and then you throw in either a Kirby or a Hancock. That's not how it goes. It's maybe they throw in a Hancock or a Williamson or something like that. Kirby's separate. He's in the Julio Kelenic category, not the other category. And I think that's a pretty important distinction that I'm not sure I realized until the last couple of days.
Well, let's talk because to our Mariners
insider. Because I don't think it was the case until
let's
recently.
Let's talk to our Mariners insider. Howdy.
Yeah, it's just been this last season.
Yeah.
Entering the season, there was a group of guys that are all potential. And people go different directions once your potential starts to get realized, right? Emerson Hancock got hurt, and his stuff didn't play quite the same way as it did. It wasn't ascending the same way it had been the previous 2 years. So his star sorts of diminished. He stays in that group.
And there are some people. There are some people who think Hancock may end up as a reliever when it's all said and done because of it. We'll find out.
Most people think that he's the most likely pitcher to be traded if you're going to bring in an impact player. Just because there is still the chance that he's got an enormous upside. But there's a lot of things that make you question whether he's going to get there. But Kirby built on every single thing that he had last year to get to where he is now. It's a great point.
And added velo.
Like, legitimate, like a couple miles an hour.
High 90s.
Yeah, like, whoa. I don't know. It legitimately blew me away, and I'm pretty, it just made me even more excited and mad that this stupid lockout's going on and that we're not having these conversations. I don't think he should be your fifth starter going into the year. I mean, I started looking at what 2022 starting pit your staff looks like. You got Marco's probably going to start day one, even though Robbie Ray is going to be your ace or your top starter. But you got Marco, you got Robbie Ray, you got Logan Gilbert, right? You got Chris Flexen. I think those four are probably going to be set in stone. Who's your fifth starter? Well, you've got this group of kids that are all knocking on the door, right? Brash came up at the very end of last year, didn't actually get a chance to pitch, but they deemed him ready to come up. And he almost started that game. If you remember, Tyler Anderson went on short notice. You have Williamson, Brandon Williamson, who's about the same spot. He's about ready to go. You've got Justin Dunn, Howdy's guy, who I'm not a big believer in, but I know other people are. Oh. I guess in theory you have, you know, Justin Sheffield. We'll talk about that. And then you got George Kirby. Do you want to go into the year starting any of those guys as your fifth starter? I don't. Mm. I want to see those guys. Like, I think that there's going to be room for them to pitch and for the big league team in 2022, assuming there's a 162 game season. But I don't want to go into it with them. You know who? You know what that leads me to believe? I want a pitcher who has some high upside potential, but maybe some injury history. Now, I'm not talking about James Paxton.
Oh,
that's
maple,
a little
the Maple
that's
Grove.
A little too much injury history for me.
The Maple Grove.
But I am talking about a different former Mariner.
Stick Riz.
I'm talking about that stank. I'm talking about Michael Pineda. Felix. I'd be super, super interested in Michael Pineda as your fifth starter going into the year. I went back and listened to that. It's like, that's Niehaus in spring training going that crazy.
I thought it was like a double-A pitcher.
It's amazing.
Nasty.
He's that excited.
Diabolical.
It's so great. I mean, what an unbelievable call.
You mentioned another name of your show, Danny Duffy.
Danny Duffy's another great, good one. Yep.
A high
another injury guy coming off a hip thing or something.
It'd be nice to have a guy whose stuff is crazy and got injured. Pineda maybe is lost a little bit.
He's not the strikeout guy that he was. I'll tell you what, though. Look at his strikeout to walk ratio. Look at his strikeouts. Look at his whip. He would have been probably the second or third best pitcher in the Mariners last year. Like, he's still a pretty darn good. It's not the ridiculous pitcher he was when he was a kid, but he's still a good pitcher. And I'm not talking about him being your ace or relying on him. You're talking about him being your fifth starter. And if there's some upside there, great. And if he ends up getting hurt, okay. I've got Brash and Williamson and Kirby and Dunn and some of these other guys that are actually getting some time in AAA to kind of work on it and figure it out. Maybe Dunn ends up in my bullpen where you could probably use him, or he's my spot starter. I mean, like, that would be a move that I would love to see them make.
Are you sure you don't want to start someone as a fifth starter with 80 command? With that defense behind him in that ballpark, are you sure?
I didn't say that. I just don't know that I want to go into the year banking on that. Plus, I never want to go into the year with only five starters anyway. I mean, like, you're going to need it. You think Flexen, who was essentially, you know, never got hurt last year, is he going to be perfectly healthy? Robbie Ray had a great year in the health. There's just too much health to rely on, right, to not go get yourself another pitcher. And if you're not going to try to deal away some of your talent in order to bring back a Manaea or somebody like that, well, there are some interesting options available in the free agent market that should be discounted because of their injury history, and you're in a unique position because of your young guys, I think, to afford to take that risk.
He was a college pitcher, Kirby. He was refined coming out of school. He's only refined it the last 2 years. He's got a 75 fastball and a 20-80 scale with an 80 command. Mm-hmm. You've got an elite defense behind you. You've got those four guys in front of him. Are you sure?
I don't know that we have an. By the way, I don't know if you have an elite defense yet. We don't know who's at third base. You don't know who's going to be in center field. Your outfield defense, Mitch Haniger's not what he once was. Kelnick's not really a center field. Like, I don't know that I would be willing to say that you've got an elite defense behind you. I think you've got a very capable. At short.
You got a very capable defense in a friendly ballpark, and you've got that kind of skill set, and this league is getting younger and younger and younger.
If I don't have to do it, if I didn't say that, I just said if I don't have to, I don't want to.
Okay.
If I don't have to, I don't want to. And you're going to need more depth anyway. You don't keep your 6-man rotation. Knock yourself out. Only make it like good players instead of bullpen starts. What if all the bullpen starts last year went to Michael Pineda?
Mm-hmm.
Like that sounds like, or to Danny Duffy, or something like that. Aren't you in for that?
Or to James Paxton.
Instead of, what was the guy they kept running out there for those starts? That guy couldn't pitch. I forget his name. He just, you know, he wasn't very good, right? Like, oh, let's bring this dude in. He's our spot start guy. And he just, you know, not good enough to get that done. So, all right, there's a couple of minutes of Mariners talk. I couldn't resist.
That was a good chunk.
Was it?
Yeah.
A good chunk?
Yeah, like 10 minutes.
I'm sorry. Are you still crying from the national championship game, or have you gotten over it yet?
No, I'm fine. I'm good. That's
Country Club story. Kid comes in and, like, has one touchdown at the end of the game, and you can't help yourself?
Stetson Salk, Bennett the Fourth. Pretty cool.
I don't think there's a Salk in there.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Barn. That's where the hay is, though.
See everybody.
Get to the chopper!